Welcome back to Blaze with Gumption. This is episode 85. King Wayne not even fucking wheelchair accessible. That's my favorite tweet from, I think, the Game of Thrones finale reactions. It's stuck. It's staying there. That's what the episode is called. I am Jessica. I am your host. Oh, well, not your host. I'm introducing your host today. But I am joined by...
May.
And your host, Tatiana.
And we are the Ladies of Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. You can contact us on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or you can send us an ask on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can find our episodes on our Podomatic page. Three guesses as to what that page name is. ladieswgumption.podomatic.com.
There are actually three options, because it could be Ladies with Gumption, it could be Ladies W Gumption, or it could be DCTV Gumption.
Oh my god.
That's true.
That is true. So you could have taken all three guesses. Anyway, you can also find our episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. We are now on Stitcher. Oh yeah, and we're also on Facebook.
How could you forget?
I was going to say, now we can say Stitcher last, but no, it's still going to be Facebook because we don't remember.
Yeah, it's still going to be Facebook. May has some Patreon news.
I do. So, this summer, we are starting our summer series because it is the summer. I've lost my train of thought, but I discussed it a little bit last week and introduced that. So, basically... to keep up a podcast, it does cost a bit of money, and we constantly run out of space because we talk a lot. And to help in our upkeep of the podcast and to continue giving you the content that you love very much, I hope, we are doing our Patreon. So right now we only have a few patrons who are contributing, and in this instance we want to kind of give back to you so that you can help us and we can help each other out. So starting at $10, at tier one, and this is the minimum, you will get episode topics over the summer like Love Boat, season-long reviews, like next week we could recap the whole season of all the DC TV shows and how they went, new season predictions, throwback episode discussions, character breakdown episodes, race and fandom discussions like we have been doing in the past, but like upgrading them and doing new stuff. Then there's the plotters versus planters conversation about how sometimes the writers drive the show by plot and sometimes they drive it by characters and what the difference is. And then
I thought you were gonna say, and sometimes they drive it by plants.
I mean, they could be. And then we also have a suggestion box so that you can vote on topics that you'd like us to tackle as well. And all of this will be going out. So I set up a page on Tumblr. So it's, if you go to ladieswgumption.tumblr.com/signup-updates, which is just go to the page and it'll be up top. And you can sign up to get Gumption delivered straight to your inbox. And that'll provide you with like all the updates on what we're doing this summer regarding Patreon. And I'll also be making a formal post on Tumblr so you have all that information and what that entails. Send to the emails as well and on the Twitter. And we have a tier two. So if you'd like to contribute $15, if you can, and again, you can cancel at any time. It'll include discussions about like Endgame, MCU fandom, and their problems and all that good stuff. And then like Game of Thrones. And if you want, I know some people also wanted us to discuss the Umbrella Academy. So if you're into that and you want to do that, that's great too. We will talk about it. So these are all the things that you will get for the summer Patreon series. So amazing stuff. Minimum is $10. Cancel anytime. But these are the things that you will get. And it'll be uploaded specifically to our patrons, so it'll be like exclusive. So yay, and hopefully you will want to hear more of us before October. And that's that on that.
Thank you, May.
Thank you.
Over to the DCTV news section. The dude from Pretty Little Liars, Drew Van Acker, who played Jason De Laurentiis, has been cast to play Aqualad which is Garth, not Calderon, but Aqualad, Garth, on Titans for the DC Universe. Thoughts on this casting? Any?
I don't have thoughts, aside from the ever-expanding cast. I think Garth is a cool guy in the few issues of Teen Titans that I've read him in, or Titans, depending, because he goes back and forth. But yeah, otherwise, I don't know this guy. I mean, I do. I've watched Pretty Little Liars, so technically I do know this guy. Yeah. But I could not.
Do you think he can pull it off?
I thought he was good in Pretty Little Liars, and yeah. He's a moderately attractive white man, so.
I mean, right. The thing is, like, we have no, like, basis right now for, like, what Garth will be doing in Titans, or, like,
yeah,
what it'll even be like.
And
you know?
Garth is, like, he's, Drew is blonde, but obviously Garth is, like, has black hair and purple eyes, yeah. I think, so.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what he looks like as.
I can't believe they cast someone who doesn't have black hair and purple eyes.
Oh my god.
Magic.
Black hair, purple eye, people erasure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
It'll be interesting to see what he looks like. Because he looks like a mini Arthur Curry in real life. But we'll see how they transform him into Garth. I'm curious as to what season 2 of Titans is actually about, because there's like a lot of people and that no kind of clear reason as to how they all get together, but
yeah,
they're still filming, right? They're not done with the season.
I think so. I think you're right. But it's weird because yeah, like it sounds like it should center around the Deathstroke family in some way, but we're not done with Trigon. And then we've got all these other randos that I don't know how they fit in, so.
Yeah, they've got, you know, Superboy as well, Connor.
That's right, Superboy, he's got to show up.
Mm-hmm. And he's got to have his whole man pain arc about, you know, discovering he's a clone and all that kind of stuff, so.
discovering he's a clone, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you said discovering he's a clown. He's Boo Boo the Fool. Me when I thought I had my own identity. Boo Boo the Fool. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what's happening on Titans, but also on the DC Universe and coming up much sooner, actually May 31st to be exact, is Swamp Thing premieres. And Tatiana has seen the first 2 episodes of Swamp Thing. Do you recommend or do you not recommend?
After the first episode, I was like, okay, I guess. But to be fair, I watched it at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, so, like, maybe I was being unfair to it. But it did feel like it was very dark, but it was kind of, like, weird. It's dark because we don't have the money to shoot it in the light.
So it's tight, what dark.
It
felt
like. Yeah, it was, like,
oh,
tight,
no.
Dark in the first
so it's, like, Titans budget.
Yeah, but I loved, like, in the first episode, I loved Crystal Reed. I mean, I always loved her, but I thought that she did really well with her character, Abby, and that Abby herself was a really interesting character with, you know, like, a mysterious and, like, unfortunate backstory in her hometown and, like, all these connections. Like, there's this cop that used to be in love with her or still maybe is in love with her. And then, like, there's her best friend who, by the way, is a lesbian. That's awesome. And then there's, like, the family that took her in, and then their daughter who died, and they blamed it on Abby. So, like, what does this mean? So all that was, you know, of interest to me. But then Alec, the main guy, was super – I found him so annoying. Like, he's a, you know, nerdy scientist-type person, but she's already a scientist. She's from the CDC. And she comes in, and he's like, I have all these answers that you don't know the answer to. Let me explain it to you. And then he kept, like – appearing, like breaking into locations that they're like that they're supposed to be studying, or you know, to stop the breakout of this disease. And I'm like, what is this man doing? Is he being helpful at all? And then, you know, at the end of the episode, he gets taken into Swamp Thingness, and I was like, they tried really hard to establish a connection between them in that first episode, which she did really. She was working. She was making the chemistry work. But when he becomes Swamp Thing, it's going to be a different actor. So I was like, was it worth it? Especially because they didn't know each other all along. If they knew each other since they were children or whatever, and right. It was like they had a past together, then I'd be like, yeah, it makes sense. They're going to be drawn back to each other. But it's like been a day. It was a day, but that's fine. It's fine.
Interesting.
The second episode was much better, though. They still filmed it like the darkness of parents. But when you could see Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing looked really cool. And the suspense, like, they did a good job of building the suspense. And because you went the whole episode without Alec, you really got to delve more into Abby's relationships with the different people in the town, and it was all quite interesting. I was
there's some kind of like controversy or weirdness going on with the show, or the something about like the creative not being.
Yeah, I think they cut it. They lost an episode or two over creative differences. Yeah. Or some people were saying budget. I think.
Yeah, right. They were saying creative differences, but I bet it was like the based lighting. On. Yeah, based on the lighting, I think it was budget. once I finished the second episode, I was like, okay, I'm intrigued. I definitely want to, you know. And there was even a scene where she's, spoilers, there's a scene where she's watching a video of him. Like, he's like doing his video diaries, and she's like trying to find information, like what he might have known about the disease before he got taken by the swamp, and she thinks he's dead. So she's watching this little video, and he's like talking about her in it. He's like, oh, I met this scientist today, and she's really smart. And I was like, I wish we had trained her like she was really smart, but whatever. And then he was like, and like, she's like, whatever. And he was like, yeah, she's really lovely. You know, and he's just like thinking about her, and she starts crying. And I was like, this is so, you're doing so good, Crystal Reed. You're keeping the ship afloat. But anyway. So
if you like Crystal Reed, do it for her.
Exactly. Do it for her. That's the moral of the story. But no, it definitely got better in the second episode.
It's kind of interesting how DC Universe as like a platform has been like hit or miss or meh. Like Titans is kind of in the middle. Like it's good, but you could have like room for improvement. You've got Doom Patrol, which is like outsold. And then then you're going back down because you lost the budget. You blew all the budget on Doom Patrol.
No, but I do think like people were raving about it. Like when I saw, you know, I went to go check the, you know, tweet reviews and people were raving about it. There was like the one person who was like, this man sucks. I was like, yes. I'm with you. But yeah, for Crystal Reed, she was really good. And then the town relationships are interesting. So I'm waiting to see. I will be continuing to watch. So. Okay.
So that could be something that we include on the summer series or something like that. For right, all of the people that want to know about Swamp Thing but not actually watch it.
Yeah, all four of you.
You don't want to pay for it. But we did convince, we were talking last week about how we don't think anybody cares about our Doom Patrol section. And then, you know, we had Ashanti on Twitter, you know, telling us that, you know, they're glad that we mentioned it because now they're watching it and they're so thrilled.
Yes.
Yay.
We made a difference in this world.
Yes.
Yes. And we are much cheaper than DC Universe.
That's true. There you go.
Also, I was going to ask May if a girl has seen Krypton yet.
A girl has not. But a girl is watching it this weekend.
Okay. I saw on Twitter they had the actor that plays Lobo, and they showed like his whole makeup process, and it's like super extensive. So I hope he is worth it. I hope it's good, because I think he's like a cool, crazy character to introduce on kind of a dull show. So I'm waiting for May's reviews to see if we will continue or not, because I am not.
Yeah, on the, I'm not on the not that side.
Anyways, so that's all of the DCE news that I think we have today. So we'll go ahead and get into the feedback section. We had two people, Shang and Anita Vacation. So first off, Shang gives his DCTV roundup. Arrowverse, oops, I'm in crisis, he writes. Hello there, lovely ladies. For Supergirl, his hot take on every person saying Lena is going evil. So what if she broke the photo frame? She is literally the most dramatic woman on the show. It's part of the Luther theatrics. Now, it totally have shot psychopath maniac that attempted genocide and murder. I don't know what you're trying to say there. Oh, okay. You totally would have shot a psychopath maniac. So he gets why she shot Lex. Right, it's not that big of a deal. Anyways, Kara, I don't kill Zor-El. Could have dived to save Lex when he was falling, but she didn't. So, and he has like the Oprah, you know. that's not doing something is doing something, and she didn't. Malafaak, I think it's pronounced Malefic, which is John's brother, but the way that it's written, like Malathak, it reminds me of like Star Wars. Like it sounds kind of Klingon-ish.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was just remembering the Star Trek. God,
how dare you confuse the two?
How dare I? I had it in my mind like Star Trek and Ash Tyler, and then it's like Star Wars. But yeah, like Ash Tyler, like Malathak, you know, whatever. My horrible Klingon pronunciation. Anyways, sidetracking, backtracking, back to the point. John's brother is coming next season. So he's like, I wonder if he's the test that the monitor is going to put E-38 through to determine if they can fight with him against the anti-monitor. Interesting. And he actually wanted the monitor to bring in Alex from another Earth so John Cryer can act as Lena's dad, which he is in some versions of the comics. Surprised that they're bringing in the Leviathan, because I thought they would have used that for Batman or Arrow, Batwoman or Arrow, seeing as how they are mostly connected to Talia. The Leviathan are known for brainwashing people and creating genetically modified metahumans, so we could get a Supergirl version of Cadmus Superboy. And he wants to know if we think that the Leviathan, since they are doing the Leviathan, if they are going to bring in Talia, or if Lillian is going to be the head of the Leviathan.
I feel like they would just use Lillian. Since they have her and she was in this season, but she wasn't really utilized as much as she could have been. So now that she and Lena are sort of on the same page, I feel like something could come of that. But I would love to see.
Would she have known, like the whole, like this whole Lex plot, because the whole reason that they sent Eve to go stalk Lex was for like the Leviathan. So
right.
Is Lillian just playing like a massive con game? Is she like Eve part two?
Yeah. So I was confused by the way they introduced it, because it was like Eve went there because they said Leviathan is coming. So Eve is not working for Leviathan. She's working to prevent Leviathan or stop Leviathan.
Oh. Interesting.
It seemed like she was working with them, under them. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I thought she was working with them to bring Leviathan.
Oh, okay. So it was like it was like a third person kind of like Leviathan, like we are going to rule or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, she was working for this super secret society to bring Leviathan, and they were supposed to use Lex, or Lex was supposed to do something to help that come about.
Okay.
Is what it felt like.
In that case,
And we've already had, like, Lillian in, what, like, season two, and her Cadmus, whatever.
Yeah. I feel like they flopped really hard with Lillian and Cadmus, so they probably aren't gonna try to redo it with Lillian and Leviathan. We'll see, though.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think post-crisis, when the worlds merge, then there's a potential for Supergirl, Batwoman crossover, like a mini crossover like they did with Supergirl and Flash. And if they're doing the Leviathan with Talia, then they could, you know, Batwoman could go over there. They could like make a connection that way or something like that. I don't know.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Anywho, overall, he says that 4B really saved 4A. They literally didn't solve anything. Kara wrote one great article, and suddenly we were meant to go, xenophobia hoost? Bitch, please. That's just his words. I like the new additions to the season. Brainia was rocky, but they have the chemistry to pull it off. My unpopular opinion is that Alex and Kelly developed too suddenly. It's not as unpopular as you think, at least among me. I don't know about the other girls, but I agree that, yeah, we'll talk about that later. Flash season 5, when he saw Nora disappearing while Iris and Barry cry, he's just like, okay, it's okay, just have sex. It's fine. She'll come back through the power of sex.
But you will have different memories, Shane. Right. her father will be alive now.
Cicada was so boring, he's suing, because that was his favorite non-speedster Flash villain. The timeline explanation was so confusing, and I felt maybe they should have one more episode or have better episodes before that. Cicada should have ended in the first half, and the real reveal that Nora was working with Thawne in the other mini hiatus, and then working up to fight Reverse Flash in the last three episodes. Hated that they removed Cisco's powers. For Legends, I think the main annoyance for me on Legends was that the magical creatures took away the historical figure's limelight during the episode. I love how crazy Legends is, but I found the writers having trouble balancing the humor and the heart, warming nature, that they did very well in season 3. Characters-wise, the whole Misfits turn family dynamics gets me into tears. I cried when they all sing Sweet Baby James. Oh. Okay. I do think the Nate Zari thing was just weird. Anywho, now that we have Bahrad, finally a POC dude on the Wave Rider, does that mean Nate? No, no, I don't think Nate and Bahrad banged. Sorry. Maybe.
Oh, my. No. Probably not. No. I think that my favorite line of the night was supposed to mean that they did not bang.
Yeah. Because he's like, yeah. All right. So
and that Ray would be very jealous. How dare you?
Ray would be very jealous.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Ray's already lost too much
love in his life. And so then the next feedback we have is from Anita Vacation. And Anita says, hello, ladies. Enjoying the hiatus. Season 5 episodes went up on Netflix on an important anniversary, May 22nd, also known as the birthday of Jenna Marie West. But has anyone seen or heard anything major about Jenna since? We haven't seen racks of baby bottles, preschool applications, not even a Jamaican nanny taking her to the park.
Right?
Oh my god, like she disappeared like Nora did.
Yeah.
Or like McSnurdle. She's been sitting here by McSnurdle.
Yeah, we can ignore minor house members, and McSnurdle agrees with me. Other questions from season 5. How did Cisco go from liking his powers and not letting the gene-swapping meta touch him and run Iris run in season 4 to rejecting his powers for the simple life? And doesn't everyone know by now that life in Central City isn't all that simple? How and when did Roth Dibny become self-publishing, self-help expert? I'd grown louder than anyone when he returned, but then I was glad to see that he turned out to be such a good friend to Iris. She often has to punt her feelings, especially at Star Labs, so the writers redeemed Roth a lot when he tipped her off about office space for the Citizen and rode shotgun with her to 2049. He should have been the master detective all along, and I like to think that a newly sensitive Roth would have gently insisted that Barry and Iris speak to him privately first about Nora's suspicious behavior. I don't want to make this a long one. Oh. She has loads more of West Island questions, but I'm interested in what you think about those things. Flash things.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Flash things.
I agree about the Cisco stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Because I thank you for reminding me. I forgot that he didn't want What's-His-Face to touch him and run Iris run. So the development there, and we're going to get into this more in like probably another podcast, but the development there, it wasn't really good because it went from one thing to the next. And I think they just wanted a story, but they didn't figure out how they were going to kind of pace it throughout the season to the point where we would have understood why Cisco came to that conclusion at the end of episode 22.
Right.
Right. That's that on that. Oh, yes. And then finally, we had an Anon on Tumblr that sent us a question. Said, I adore both Maisie and Tala, and I'm beyond glad neither actress has been written out of the show, but it bothers me that Legends has now written out two women of color, Amaya and Zari, only to bring in new characters for them to essay, or I guess play.
Yeah.
The new Zari sounds awesome, and Charlie is amazing, but I don't like how the reset button gets set for them while all the white characters have not been written out and a reset button not set on them. Thoughts?
Yes.
Tati pulls out her podium.
No, I actually have this in my dislikes for the episode, so yes, I totally agree. But to be fair, it is not just the women of color that have been written out, because the first character that was written out was, or rewritten, if you will, however you want to say it, rebooted, was a dude whose name I have forgotten, Arthur Darvill.
Rip Hunter.
Thank you. That is how irrelevant he was, because I cannot even remember his name. But that's the thing. So Rip Hunter was rebooted, and we all agreed it's because we don't care about him, and he needed to be better, right? He was boring. And then, even that didn't work, and he got written out of the show altogether. So that is how I feel about, like, that's when you reboot a character, when you don't care about them. So, and clearly, even the way that they described the reboot for Maisie, for Maya, was like, oh, we didn't know where to go with that character. We felt like we were, like, hindering Maisie as an actress because Maya is so, like, straight-laced and Maisie's so fun. And I'm like, that's just so insulting and weird to Maya to say that.
It's unimaginative.
Yeah. And then...
And then they didn't do anything with Charlie.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He replaced her, but they didn't do anything with Charlie. So, like, thank God Charlie's still around, but she may as well not have been the way that they wrote her. They even brought in Mona to replace what could have been Charlie's role this season. So, like, weird. So they had to, like, share the duties of that one role.
Right.
And now they're doing it to Zari, which is very strange, because at least in Zari's debut season, it seemed like she was, like, the character they're most interested in. Mm-hmm. But then this season came, and they just kind of dropped her family and future storyline, which was, like, could have been a whole season arc. It kind of was in her first season, but it was only in the background. Like, I kind of want to do this. Okay, I won't, you know? Mm-hmm. But her actually getting it to happen could have been a whole season arc instead of just randomly. Especially
considering where we ended the season.
Yeah. Instead of just randomly, like, halfway through the episode, the finale, she realizes that if this unrelated thing happens, then her family will be back. Like, oh, I forgot this was a thing that I cared about. I forgot this was the building block of my character development. So I don't know if it's, like, the Nate curse, like, being in proximity of Nate, or being used to serve Nate's storyline.
I think they're more inspired by Nate, so that everyone who gets, close to him gets...
That's the problem. But anyway, that's our preview on Legends, because we'll get more into that on Legends. So since we're already going down that road, let's jump into the format for this week. So we only have one side, because it's just three shows. So Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and Doom Patrol, likes, dislikes, Lady with Gumption of the Week. We start off with Supergirl, and this side, A, is the only side, but it's called Only in America, More Pelvis in That Hug Than Usual, and Fortis Project.
The best. Okay. We begin with Supergirl. Supergirl's finale was called The Quest for Peace. Lex Luthor descends upon Washington, D.C., summoning Lena and Lillian Luthor in all their fashionable glory to the White House. Kara realizes she has one last chance to stop Lex and turns to the power of the press to help her, while Linda realizes her Alex is a hater and promptly dies for our sins. Our Alex kisses Kelly. Our brainy loves Nia. Lena finds out about Kara and the fact that James already knew. And the monitor meets up with some dude, Malefic, who hates John. Jesse Ward directed the episode, written by Robert Rovner and Jessica Queller, with a teleplay by Rob Wright and Derek Simon. Never before have I seen so many people involved in the creation of one episode of Supergirl. What did we like about this episode?
Well, I think I agree with Shang that the back half of Supergirl is what kind of wins the overall season for me. And what's really interesting is that when you look at all of the Arrowverse shows, Supergirl is actually the most comic booky of all of them at the moment. Like, Arrow largely goes off book and makes up its own shit. Legends has no real kind of comic anchor in its shows. And then The Flash promises all these big things but kind of fails on execution. So it's not doing anything with the big comic things that they do have. They don't really do anything with them. Whereas in Supergirl, in this one season, we had a pretty well-developed solo arcs for Brainiac 5 and for Dreamer. You have the resurrection of Martian Manhunter, the introduction of his brother in the finale. You've got Lex Luthor and then Eve being actually more like her comic, you know, character, being his sidekick or side piece, whatever. You've got Red Daughter, and now the Leviathan is coming. Like, that's a whole lot of comic booky stuff, and they've managed to pull it off pretty well. Like, it may have some issues with some other things, but leaning into, like, the comics diaspora is not one of them. Like, it's really, really, I think for comic book fans, it's the most comic book-like show on the CW. And I like that this episode kind of got into the action right away with the whole 24-hour rewind of the episode before from Lex's perspective. And then it was cut with scenes that we've already kind of seen, complete with the timestamp, so the audience could put together, like, this whole comprehensive picture of what just happened. Love the song choice, My Way, as Lex, like, puts his plan into action to backstab Kasmi and destroy the military. I thought that was really well done and showed how, like, how egotistical he is. I liked Reset Brainy. I wish he was around for a longer period of time before Brainy got his memories or realigned. I thought the scene of him interacting with Alex, Lena, and Kara, and then feeling like something is more off with him than usual, but not being able to put a finger on it, was really, like, an interesting dynamic to see. I also liked that he was pissed and tried to blast him when he finally showed up to help.
Yes!
I thought that was really funny. Then while I do wish Brainy's realignment could have happened over the course of maybe a couple episodes rather than so abruptly. Because I just feel like if it was this easy to realign him, then why was he so scared or nervous about getting reset in the first place? And I will agree with Tati in the future of the overall like timing and how it happened.
Yes.
But the one thing that I did like about the whole Brainy ship sailing or whatever was the whole "you're stazing me" and all. I thought it was a cute line because let's be real, she is. So I like that in a sense. Because he's like, "you're amazing," and he's like, "you're astounding," and he's like, "you're stazing." Like this word doesn't make any sense, but I'm gonna say it because it isn't. I don't care that it doesn't make sense because I have evolved.
Right.
And I like the reemergence of the whole little boxes concept. But I wish it had been something that had been a little bit more consistent with Brainy over the course of the season to kind of foreshadow him getting to the point where all of his boxes kind of like open up or whatever and he gets reset. I thought that would have made it a little clear that that's what was happening and him trying to, you know, put his emotions back into boxes and it not working. And I thought it was funny that Brainy didn't really care that John was about to die and he only started to care when he was going to die.
He knows what he wants.
He knows what he wants. I guess I'm like okay that Lillian and Lena appear to have reconciled and their like mutual hate of Lex, but I thought it was like LMAO that they try to say cancer was the reason that Lex looks older than Lillian. It's like, sure, Jan. Okay. That's interesting how they knew that John Cryer looked a little bit too old to be playing Lex Luthor and being Lita's brother. So cancer makes you old, I guess. Like Lena shitting on Eve will always be my aesthetic. I like when she's like mean to Eve. And then the final scene between like Lex and Lena was really sad and cruel on Lex's part. Like he shits on her all the time, but truthfully, I think like he never tried to kill her, not because she was Finley, but because she was the only one that was like on his level intellectually. Mm-hmm. So like if you kill the only person that's on your level, then who is left to like interact with? Like you have nobody. And I think that's why he thought that she would never kill him, because it was, you know, the same thing. If he died, then who would she have to like compete against or whatever? So I felt like she showed a lot of strength in that scene and she kind of won in that moment that she actually did kill him. But then him revealing that Kara's secret and that she was Supergirl was just kind of like his petty way to make sure that he got the last word in, and because he's trash. So yeah.
That he is. But speaking of Lex, since you mentioned him, Lex's whole introduction in the back half of the season really worked to tie together all of the season-long plots. Because I think without him, the Lockwood or the President stuff would have not worked on its own. And I don't like that Linda died, but I do like that she went out like a hero by saving Kara and realizing that Lex was a monster all along, even though I felt really sad for her. And agree about the use of My Way and the montage of Lex's destruction in the opening scenes of the finale. The quote, like three Luthers in the Oval Office, only in America, sounded so hilariously evil. And I think what really works about Lex that doesn't work with other villains on the other shows, besides just being the Lex Luthor, is that he's so smug and sarcastic. Like he knows what he's going to do. His motives are always clear. And there's this level-headed insanity about his actions and personality that just clicks. And I think if all the other shows let their villains have as much personality as Lex does, they'd all be better for it.
Right.
Yeah. And like even while trying to use aliens' powers for energy, he still wanted to destroy Argo because Superman was there. So it's good to know that Superman is always his priority and it's very on brand. And I loved how united Lena and Lillian are against Lex, although now I'm thinking she could just betray her later. It is a strange thing to bond over your dislike of a relative, but, you know, if it works, it works. And John and Dreamer's team up was really great, as was Alex finally being in the know again and missing when Kara removes her glasses right before she flies off. That was really cute. And it was a great character moment for Jean, specifically when he explained why he was willing to sacrifice himself to save Earth, other than it being the right thing to do. Like, it tied in nicely with his development this season and his guilt for not saving as many Martians as he could. So it's like making up for it here. And we've always liked Jean, but I'm not sure he's always liked himself because of that past guilt. And this moment really felt like a personal redemption for his own well-being, which is really great. And then Kara finally getting to beat the hell out of Lockwood was great, so I cheered for that. And then Haley as interim secretary, I loved that too, especially because that means she'll probably be around next season, and I like her dynamic with Alex, so I'm looking forward to that. And then Alex and Kelly finally getting together. I know that Jess probably disagrees, but I thought it was a very sweet and satisfying moment.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Yeah,
I am excited to see where the relationship goes next season. Even though they could have had like more moments in general. And then finally, while it was sad, Lex revealing to Lena that Kara was Supergirl worked to end the season with some like personal tension. Like, you can tell how shaken Lena was and how that fuels her decision to keep quiet later instead of just storming off to fight with Kara about her lying. And I think it made it a lot more interesting because of that reason. So that I know that this is going to be a big fight next season, but in general, I thought it was like the strongest finale plot-wise of all the Arrowverse shows.
That's a good strongest finale plot-wise.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it probably is.
So yeah, I liked a lot about the episode. Like, even the opening sequence for Lex, even though what he was doing was horrible, and I obviously hate his guts and I want him to die. But him like singing or humming My Way while going through his like a genocidal sequence was quite a Lexian of him. How very Luther. Also, I loved Linda confronting him, you know, and being like, oh, you're supposed to help my people. And then he was like, if you had Googled me, you would know that I don't help anybody. But yeah, so even though it was like too little too late, I'm glad that she understood what was going on immediately. And she tried to, you know, try to stop him. I also liked that Kara turned to the power of the press. Even though it wasn't particularly well implemented in the finale, it was a culmination of her arc all season, which has been, you know, using her role as a reporter to enact change where even Supergirl can't. So I like that. Also loved the Nia and John stuff. Love that they banded together with their fellow aliens, that they were like the agents of their own rescue. So I guess thanks for showing they could do that, Brainy. But yeah, and I love what you said about John, and I totally agree that it was really nice to see him sort of like coming to terms with like who he is and what he stands for, and it being a empowering moment for him. Martian empowerment. Nia shooting Brainy for being a jerk face was great. I love that. I very much approve of making him suffer for his one episode of coldness. And I really believed the performances. I felt like the actors sold the part, like him returning to himself, right? The John and especially Nia putting themselves in danger, and then like him thinking it's a suicide mission, but regaining himself in order to give them confidence, and to tell Nia that she's amazing and declare his love for her. All of that, even though like the way it was written was a little bit like, okay, sure, I guess, but the way it was done was good. I really liked how...
Like, the writing was shit, but the acting was superb.
Yes. I loved how Jesse played it, and then I thought Nicole's reaction was great. So yes, I loved all that. I loved Lena and Lillian. I like their new little, you know, like tenuous bond. They looked bomb when they went to go visit Lex. They both looked like classy ladies. I loved that Lillian like tried to poison him, and then she was like, I can't wait for him to shut the fuck up and drink this poison because this is not happening. Also, when she said, try not to quote Hitler in public, dear, it'll hurt the brand. That's just common sense. Good job. So yeah, I really love that line. Katie did so well. Like, Lena finding out about the truth about Kara, I felt so bad for her. And like, you know, like you said, Lex just going out like that, right? Just being petty as fuck till the moment he dies.
because he lost. Like, he knew he lost. He's like, by the way, let me do this one. Like, it's like one of those annoying people that just like always have to have the last word in.
That was very on brand for him. But yeah, I definitely want to yell at Kara and everyone else on her behalf. And the way that he did it, like, not just like, oh yeah, Kara's Supergirl, she's been lying to you, and everyone else you know and love,
everyone knows else and has been lying to you. You are like, not loved or trusted at all. You are alone in the world.
That was horrible.
Everybody hates you.
That was so mean, but effective, right? That was like, if it was just Kara is Supergirl, that'd be one thing. But like, Kara is Supergirl, and literally everyone but you knows. And they're all in on the secret. And your boyfriend knows. And they're all kicking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just there sitting alone, eating your lunch in the bathroom. Because
even
no
the
one
girl
that
just got here knows that you don't know.
Like, oh my God.
It's so awful. Okay. So, yeah. And then when she had to go see everyone and then be like, oh, you're on our side, right? Always. Having to fake it till you make it. Fake it till you break your picture of the Danvers sisters. Anyways, that was good. I really like that last part. And then, that like, the little bits. What?
That was a super core picture that she planned a shot last night.
Okay. So, Baker. Baker being done as president. Yay! Snaps. Yay. Snaps for that. Haley being interim secretary of alien affairs. Great. Love it. Lockwood is now in prison, and his son's talking shit about him on national TV. Love that for him. Yes, that's what he deserves. Kelly confessing, kissing, and Alex kissing her. How nice. Although we will talk about this, but it's nice that it happened. I'm happy for them. And then, you know,
I feel like all you both will talk about this, and I'll just be like, I don't know. I like
and Brady, like the fact that Brady and Nia are, I guess, together now. They were looking happy, so I'm happy for them that they're happy in whatever nebulous state they're in. And then the fact that they're bringing Leviathan, that's great. And Malefic, also great. Excited, looking forward to what's next. So, what did we not like so much? What are we not pumped about?
What did not spark joy?
Yes, what did not spark joy? What did not spark joy?
I don't like that Lex and Eve's whole plan was basically genocide as energy conservation. And Eve only gets upset when Lex reveals he wants to use half of that energy collected from living beings to destroy Argo City. So, like, just like a white woman. Like, trust it to a white woman to only question morality of an evil plan when it affects something happening to her. I thought that was just, first of all, not only are you killing actual living things for energy, you're like, you, that didn't bother you, but it only bothers you when he wants to use it for like a petty beef with Superman. I don't know. Their whole plan is just like kidnapping and killing aliens to absorb their powers. And I feel like it's pretty sick and disgusting. And I'm surprised at how that fact was kind of glossed over, because up until now, we hadn't really seen what they were doing with all these kidnapped aliens and, you know, how their powers are being collected or whatever. And then it gets revealed, quote unquote, or you see it actually in the finale, and it's just kind of like a thing that happens. And I feel like maybe if we had actually spent more time on the alien side of alien rights debate, we could have had more reporter Kara and Nia bringing those kind of things to light. Kind of like if they want to, because I know like a lot of this season was them trying to compare alien rights to like real life events going on in the US. And if they wanted to do something like that and really make it like a comparison or a parallel or whatever, like the whole detention centers and aliens dying or disappearing, or, you know, all of these things that Kara and Nia could have been reporting on in the background over the course of the season to kind of lead up to it and what's actually happened to them, would have made it, I think, a more powerful moment and given it the attention that it deserved, that Lex's plan was basically just like killing a whole bunch of aliens. That would have made it even more poignant, I guess, in the finale. And I feel like even Kara's like watershed article seemed just more like Lex using Cosnia to invade the US and not the atrocity of killing aliens for their powers to light up your summer home. So like I just felt like it was really just kind of glossed over, and it was kind of anyways, I was relieved to see that Linda survived, but not relieved when she got stuck in a pod, especially, of course, like when we actually learn what happens to aliens in those pods. It's like, my poor baby. She was so depressed. Like, her whole ideology is just, like, crashed down. All of her morality is built on lies told to her by Lex. And I just felt really bad for her. And poor Linda. But poor I do like that she got reabsorbed or whatever, recombined with Ashihara. And Kara's like twice as strong now. Like, basically the season, Kara's been working with like half her powers.
Yeah.
And then when Linda comes back, she's got twice the strength. But I did feel really sad for the way Linda's storyline kind of resolved at the end, especially since we didn't really see her very much either over the course of the season, because it would have revealed her ties to Lex. So that was unfortunate. I didn't get my wish for Ben Lockwood to die from messing with a chemical that he did not understand. I don't really see what the point of him surviving this whole ordeal and going to jail was.
He didn't have any other effects from it, did he?
Right. So I don't really see what was the point. And I definitely hated when his self-righteous ass like showed up at Shelly Island knowing that he'd been played by Lex and still inserting himself into a situation that didn't prepare him by fighting the Super Friends. At least he didn't get like a hero redemption thing, which is what we were afraid of, but I still didn't like that. Oh, so you're still a piece of shit. Like, you know you've been played and you're still gonna be a piece of shit. All right, that's right, cool. Great, right. Thank you. Like, the only reason they can think to keep him alive is because they didn't want to make George an orphan. But if that was the case, then maybe you shouldn't have killed his mom. Like, she could have still been alive. He could die.
And also, like, it's not like we're going to watch George live his life after this. He can go to a foster care, like, foster home where people are nice and not racist.
Yeah. I feel like Ben, like, dying, like, hoisted by his own petard.
Watch his alien friend take George in. That would just be...
Oh, yeah.
That would have been the best ending!
That would have been a good ending. Like, Ben dies. And it, you know, it's a warning to the dangers of being, like, racist and a bigot. So, like, real life implications. Like, don't be racist or you will die.
George... You will get pregnant and die.
You will get pregnant and die. And then George gets to live with, like, his alien bestie. Yeah, that would have been better. We should rewrite that part of the show. Speaking of George, like, him holding his own press conference and be like, can't we all just get along? Like, I know y'all thought it was, you know, cute, like, he's shitting on his dad, great, yay, but it just kind of rang shallow to me in terms of like what the audience should be taking from the season as a whole. It's because like the whole thing again is framed from human perspective and how humans feel about it. So like George is like the poster child for like this alien debate or whatever, and outside of helping to start a brief prison riot, not one resident National City alien citizen has had their story kind of centered in any meaningful way over the course of the season. And not even in their victory of Lex being defeated and their restrictions against him lifted, do you really even see any kind of reaction or perspective from like the actual aliens that have been affected by all this. Like, I'm glad you learned aliens are beings too, little George, but I don't want to hear from you. I'd rather hear the stories of someone else.
Yeah, and this is where actually like the whole meta of the week on Flash would have worked for Supergirl, like at least for a couple of, you know, episodes, so that they could highlight like, hey, these are aliens that live in the city and this is what they do and they're not bad.
These are their stories.
Dun, yeah. Dun.
Over on the ship side, like, I've dragged my feet all season long on Brainia because I thought at sometimes it's been like kind of clumsily or shallowly developed. They kept going like back and forth and using it more as like a comic relief storyline as opposed to actual something that they are interested in going ship wise. So I would, and I will save the Brainia side of the episode for someone else to discuss. I think Taji will go into like the whole realignment part of it, but I could be remiss to not also keep that same energy when looking at the development or lack thereof between Kelly and Alex. In the finale, I liked the kiss. I thought it was a good kiss. I liked Kelly's speech. I want the ship to happen, but I can't pretend that Kelly's speech and the kiss were necessarily earned, considering 90% of their actual friendship and relationship development happened off screen. So, like, aside from having both women casually drop their ex-girlfriend into conversation, so you both know that they like women and are available, all of their interactions have either been Alex being there for Kelly while James dies in the background, or Kelly giving free therapy to Alex. Like, that's all you see of them. Like, what? Like, and it was so sudden how, you know, they met at the hospital, and all of a sudden, every time you see the scenes, they're together. But I don't know how they got together, who gave who their number, how did we decide to, you know, go for runs in the morning, all this kind of stuff. You don't really get to see any of that. And even before, like, we didn't get to see Alex dating before Kelly got here. And now that Kelly is here, we still don't get to see any of that cute date stuff. So, like, shits and romance are surprisingly the least developed element on the show. And I don't understand why. At the end, like, with, like, Brainia and Kelly and Alex, and it felt like the writer's like, yeah, we did something. We have two ships that went off. And I'm just like, really? Like, is this really, like, a...
And none for Cardam.
And then none for Cardam. Like, it didn't really feel like an achievement or anything.
Yeah.
It felt kind of corny.
I absolutely actually do agree with that. I guess when I was just, like, writing my dislike notes, I was like, oh, it was so nice, but you make very valid points about lack of development. As for what did not spark joy in general, besides, you know, wanting to have seen more of Kelly and Alex, I guess they really just want to give Alex a baby, so they're just like, hey.
They don't think she can do it alone. I see how it is.
Right? What kind of thinking is that? But anyway, I do think Linda was taken out, like, way too quickly. I know Lex was using her and all of that, but I think it would have been more interesting if there had been more time for her and Kara to interact besides the big fight that they had last episode, and then her sacrifice in this one.
Well, like, even more time for her to, like, be, like, dressed as Kara and interact with people,
like,
not knowing that she isn't Kara.
That right. Life, so that the devastation would have been more potent, you know? And then Brainy's realignment also happened too quickly. Like, his turn to back to his, like, reset button or whatever lasted a half an episode before he was affected by, you know, Jean and Nia's sacrifices and the power of love. But
only
it was
did not care about Jean.
Right.
There's only a specific kind of love that powers you.
The power of love for Nia. it was very unearned. Like, if they developed Brainy and Nia over or more thoroughly throughout the season, then this scene would have had more of an emotional impact, and I would have believed that he snapped out of it because of her. And it's also weird to me, like you were talking about Alex and Kelly not having that much development, but what's weird is that Nia and Brainy have had more time to develop, but it was Alex and Kelly who got a moment to reveal their feelings for each other instead. I feel like the writers are more invested in that ship, regardless of, like, the lack of development on screen, versus, like, Brainia. And I'm not saying that they, you know, Kelly and Alex shouldn't have or anything like that, but the writers still seem like they're just not willing to go all in yet. Like, why not give them a big moment, you know? It's all of their moments have kind of been, like, half-assed or dropped completely. So this is like the episode where it would have been, they should have gotten a scene where they discussed their feelings, or they had, like, a big moment or an epic kiss or something, because it just doesn't feel like there's as much of a spark with the writing that there should be. Because I feel like if it wasn't for Jesse Rath and Nicole Maines, and it would just kind of be there.
if they weren't played by who they're played by, then
exactly. Right. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I would say, like, their like, most epic moment was when Nia wasn't even there, because it was when he was being tortured and he was like, "Don't hurt her." You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, y'all can't do that with both of them in the same scene.
Right? And then Eve suddenly developing a heart last minute did feel like it came out of nowhere as well. Like, she's been hopelessly devoted to Lex. Hopelessly devoted to Lex the whole time. And she's never been shown questioning his methods until now. Like, sure, she could
have affected her. Yeah. This entire white woman agenda.
Oh, my God.
Like, she could have been put off because he didn't reveal this part of the plan to her. But, like Jess said, you know, it finally affected her. So she's like, yay, concern.
Yeah.
I wonder if that has to do with the Leviathan, actually. I guess spoiler prediction, but.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. I was also kind of annoyed with Alex for telling Kara not to reveal her secret to Lena. Just let her do it. Let her do it. She always seems to want to, and something happens that makes her change her mind. And it's surprising because I would have thought Alex understood what it's like not to know, because she spent most of the season not knowing. So she'd vouch for Kara telling Lena because of what happened to her. And I just feel like they just want Kara to feel like she should and can't. And that's really starting to get old, like we've discussed several times.
Yeah. And what was Alex's, like, reasoning was that she just lost Lex or something like that? Like, that's the perfect time.
Are we talking about the same brother?
She's upset right now. Let's just do it just in a good mood.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
her brother died that she killed.
Yeah. Like, it'll only end in tears and pain. And finally, I really wish it had been an alien who had spoken out about Lockwood and uniting the country at the end. Like, even with Lockwood and Jalen, and just touched upon this really well, like they still gave that platform to George instead of someone who's been victimized by his father.
Right.
So
like, how the hell, like, he called his own press conference.
George, stand up. Like, find George's friend, let him speak at the podium.
They could have held hands together and been like, human alien relations.
Because, like, the fact that the aliens have remained largely voiceless throughout the season will always bug me. So
I really think that could have, like, I would have been okay with that if they had George's alien friend, like, holding, like, a press conference with, like, George supporting him.
Yeah, like, use your privilege, George. Give the microphone. Yes.
Use your privilege, George. Yes. It's a lesson he needs to learn next season. Next season will be about George learning to use his privilege for the greater good. But what you said about something, you said stuff that reminded me of stuff. I don't remember when it was. But I do think there's a lot of writing in Supergirl that it feels like it's there because they want to get them to a certain place. Like, for example, it doesn't make sense that first off, it doesn't make sense that Kara wouldn't tell Lena in the first place. But it also doesn't make sense that Alex would suddenly say, don't tell her. Like you said, she would probably be like, I know that it was weird when I didn't know. I feel much closer to you now that I know. You should therefore tell Lena. And the reason for that is simply because they want Kara and Lena to be at odds next season. Now that Lena has known the truth and she knows that Kara kept it from her instead of, like, went out of her way not to tell her. But they also don't want you mad at Kara. So they suddenly brought it up, like, three episodes before the end. For the first time in 3 years, Kara was like, maybe I should tell Lena. What if I've been wanting to tell her all along? So it just rings hollow. Similarly, it's kind of like the odd placement of Kara, of Alex and Alex and Callie versus Nia and Brainy might be because, like you said, they want to give Alex a baby, and no one wants single mothers for some reason. So she's got to have another person to have the baby with. So they're like, let's just get them to that place so we can write that plot line. Just like they did with Alex and Maggie. Even after knowing Maggie was going to leave, they're like, let's just get them engaged so that then we can have the marriage, you know, the wedding falling apart instead of just writing it naturally. And maybe that's why Nia and Brittany is just kind of like floating in the wind, because they don't have like a specific destination. So if they don't know where they're going with it, they're kind of like, what's naturally writing?
I have a different thought about that. But I'll get to it in predictions.
Okay. So my dislikes, aside from that, are just like, so Lex just like stuffing Linda in her box, in her pod, whatever, until it was time for her to pop out and sacrifice herself for Kara. I was like, why? She could have played, like you said, she could have played a bigger role in this episode. It was just kind of annoying that it was like, hi, Linda. Bye, Linda. Oh, hello, and final goodbye again. Thank you for your service. So I don't know. I would have been much cooler to see her get more of a redemption by actually like actively seeking out Kara and trying to stop Lex, help her stop Lex, instead of just, you were right about Alex. So yeah, obviously Kara writing one article off screen using Brainiac's conveniently downloaded information and then suddenly gaining just like traction, right? Suddenly everyone being like, yes, I agree. Are we talking about what we like right now?
What we don't like.
Okay. I was like, wait a second. How much am I talking about what I like or don't like? Okay. So like it was like silly, right? So it's just kind of like feels really fake. Like every day we have an article about how Donald Trump divided and betrayed America. And every day I'm sure it has at least as much information as Kara's article supposedly did. And it has never once moved the needle. Like, I guess that's why this is escapist fantasy. But yeah. It was very like, okay, sure. We agree. And also, of course, it would have been nice if once again they had focused on the actual victims and not just like, I don't know, we suddenly don't like Lex because he was doing this for himself. You know, when we thought he was doing it for us, kill all the aliens for us. We like that, but not for you. Okay, sure. Also, I don't understand. Yeah, the Eve thing, I didn't care. Like, she suddenly is upset because she doesn't want something to happen to Superman. And I know it's because it's like she's working for someone else and there's like a twist here and like Leviathan's involved. But I feel like all she's done is go along with Lex's plans. Like, she's never, you can't go back and find parts, or I don't think you can, where she was actually like working against him, or like where she did anything, like something like he couldn't have done without her. She just seemed like a lackey. But now suddenly her presence with him was really important in some way, either because she was furthering a plot on behalf of Leviathan that Lex was supposed to be the agent of, or because she was trying to stop Lex because Leviathan had a different plan. I don't know which one it is, but whichever way, we don't have, there's no seeding of that throughout. Like the scene where she speaks with, where she's alone and her, with her copies, with Lena and Kara, didn't show any indication that she was anything other than a Lex fangirl. So I don't know. I think it's kind of, it feels like it was just like a last minute, like, well, we don't want to get rid of Eve, the actress. Yeah. And we've taken it too far with her. So we've got to somehow put it in a different direction. Exactly. Bring it back. Bring it back. yeah, I also don't understand the point of Lockwood surviving or even of him having used the Harrenel at all. Like, I feel like it's just like, hey, when you use the Harrenel, bad stuff happens to you. So foreshadowing that bad stuff will happen to James. And I don't want that. You can keep that. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, that was the only purpose I saw for it. And even then, in previous episodes, it's like, oh, is that going to happen to me? No, James, I gave you a better dose. Don't even worry about it. Oh, wait, my nose is bleeding. Exactly. Oh, wait, it is happening to me. Oops. Okay. Thank you for
maybe
that.
We'll just drop in season 5 Ben Lockwood like dead in jail after having
like, oh shit, we have to save James. I don't know, but I don't like it. It was unnecessary. And no, I do not subscribe to the idea that Lena is crazy or evil for killing her abusive and genocidal brother, but I did think that the scene played out like the first half of the scene was like odd to me. Like, it, like she just played it like, okay, I'm gonna kill you now. Okay, I'm killing you. I thought she could have been a little bit more shaken or, you know, whatever. I feel like they did it to contrast because, like, oh, I don't care about this. And then now I care because I'm learning the truth about Kara. So now we see how shaken she is in reaction. But I feel like I still could have believed she was upset if she had shown any kind of, like, concern about killing Lex beforehand. But I don't know. Maybe just, you know, the Luthers just express their love by trying to kill each other, I guess. Because Lillian was also like, yes, drink the poison, Lex. So, I don't know. Whatever. It's fine. Okay. So, finally, yes, I'm very happy that Nia and Brainy are on the same page, I think. But I think it's very weird that they didn't get a big romantic and, like, first serious kiss. Like, a kiss that was, like, played straightforwardly. Like, this is a big romantic moment. The way that Alex and Kelly got one. Like, Alex and Kelly got a clearer and more straightforward scene this week after, like, 4 episodes of development of really, like, knowing each other. Then Nia and Brainy got in their several scenes this episode after a full season of development. So I don't really, like, I already said, like, maybe it's because they just don't know where they're going with it, so they're just kind of meandering. But I don't see why, considering they've invested so much time into it, why they wouldn't invest passion or, you know, energy into the scene so that, at least for the very least, we know what, like, are they together right now, you know? Like, are they...
Right. I feel like they're supposed to be together, but they still just feel like a really good buddy duo.
Yeah. Did Nia ever get to tell Brainy that she loves him? Like, he realized he loved her. Great. He was going to confess. Seemed, like, excited to hear that confession, but then he couldn't. Then he said it again while she's, you know, half dying while stopping the Argo stuff. And then they're just kind of together at the end. So, like, you didn't see her ever be like, I love you too, Brainy. So I don't know. Yeah. Like, I feel it's like a really weird.
I feel like the development started off with her liking him, and then it kind of shifted to him, and we never really got much of her perspective anymore.
Yeah.
After she called him Keanu or whatever, and that was like it.
It was very strange. It's very strange. Like, I mean, I know she likes him. Like, I just, like, I knew he liked her. Like, I know they like each other. The way that they write it seems so, like, imbalanced from time to time. Like, they don't know which way to go or how much to put in there. I don't know. It's weird. It's not that hard to write romance, guys. I don't know what this is. I don't know what's going on. So, yeah, I think that's... Oh, right. So my last thing is just kind of like, if Lex was going to get brought back by the monitor, like, 2 seconds later or whatever the hell the monitor is doing, then, like, did he need to die at all? Did Lena really need to kill him? Couldn't he have just been like, hey, Lena, I'm flying away on a jet plane, but before I do, Kara knows that you're Kara Supergirl and everyone else knows. Bye. I don't know. Just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, like, it could have been a video message.
Yeah. Like, will Lena...
Like, you thought I was here, but actually...
Exactly.
I have escaped.
Right. She could have shot him, and then it could have been a hologram. Like, that happens a lot, right? We love doing that. We love shooting holograms.
Or a copy of Lex or whatever.
Yeah. Yes! Something like that. Because I just don't believe they're going to, like, have Lena deal with the fact that she killed her brother. And then he's not even dead. So, like, whatever. Okay. That's all. So what do we predict? What do we think could happen? What was going to be your prediction telling me that I'm wrong? Jessica.
Well, about Rhaenyra, because I think I may have answered this on, like, one of our asks on Tumblr or whatever, but I think that they want to, in the next season, it'll be about Nura and her existence or not. And because I told you that as soon as I came to terms with the fact they were going to get together, I'm like, I have to blow this up somehow. And I think, like, this whole, they wanted to do, like, the whole brainy feelings evolution kind of thing first. And so then, you know, they can do that with Nia as, like, a starter ship. But then, like, the whole other elephant in the room is that her descendant in the future is probably going to disappear or not if he keeps changing stuff in the present. So I feel like that's going to be the thing in the next season. And so to get to that point, they had to put them together quickly at the end of this season. So I feel like that's where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. So that's my prediction on that. And then with Eve, I think she was upset that he was going to take out Argo because that wasn't the Leviathan's plan. And so she had been going on with everything that he was doing because he was on track, and then he got off track because he's obsessed with Superman, and so that's what that is. I feel like I had one more, but I don't remember what it is at all, so.
I like that Leviathan prediction. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess my only prediction is because I suck at these, but Alex, because who was it that was telling us listening to our podcast back then is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Because our predictions are like... half the time they're probably super off in comparison to what happened on the actual shows.
So sad.
Yes. But yeah, my only prediction would be probably Alex and Kelly will have established enough of their relationship by the mid-season finale for Alex to finally get, like, that adoption to go through by that point.
Right. Yeah. I don't got anything. I agree with, I definitely agree that Nora is going to come into play. Like, there's got to be some reason why Rainey didn't want her to know about the future. But, I don't want it to be, I want it to end well. I want to get my ship. So
I still think it will end well. Like, the ending will be well.
Yeah.
No one will be heartbroken or, you know, any of that stuff, but I do think it will end.
Well, that's not, obviously that's not what I want.
I'm not going to predict Brainy is going to be the father like we did with Nate.
Yeah, no.
That would have been a better ending though. I hate y'all. Why did you write it in bed? You should have written it in good.
Nate really should have been the father in that situation.
Yeah. That would have made more sense.
Yep. Oh, well. Okay. Let's move on before I think more about that. On to Legends of Tomorrow. Hey, world. While on a mission to find Rey, Constantine and Nora discover Neron's evil plan to bring hell on Earth. Nate convinces the legends to think outside the box and suggests a dangerous plan to unite magical creatures and people to save the world. It doesn't work for a while because it's a stupid plan, but then it works because it's a stupid show. It works so well, in fact, that Zari gets erased and replaced by her brother. Yay? Kevin Mock directed the episode written by Phil Klemmer and Kedo Shimizu. What did we like about the episode?
Your hey world.
Yeah, I like that one.
I should be like, hey world, but I will.
It's like, hey girl, but hey world.
Yeah. Sarah going on about how they had to dress like franchise superheroes or else no one would listen to them was hilarious. And poked fun of like how off base the show is when compared to the other comics canon, you know, that the other shows usually have. Like Jess was saying earlier about Supergirl being more aligned with theirs. Legends is not. Doesn't even have one. And then Nora and Rey kissing. The only other OTP on this show that I recognize besides Avalanche is finally rising after a whole season. Yay! This kiss was earned. And then the fact that the show actually called Rey / Neron combo Nirei on the show was hilarious. As was the fact that Rey's torturer turned out to be Vandal Savage, but they're friends now, even though they like the same woman. No big deal. I like the idea that souls are currency, and if you have enough of the powerful ones, you can rule. So I thought Astra using that to her advantage was smart on her part. So I'm interested to see where that's going next season. And then the monitor eating popcorn or nuts was really funny, especially when you think about how powerful of a being he is. But there he is, like, standing around watching all the nonsense and being entertained. And then maybe it's his day off. I don't know. And finally, even though most of this plot did not bring me joy, I did like the moment between Nate and his dad. It honestly felt like real final closure, which is why I thought he was dead. But, you know, alas.
Yeah. I didn't write anything for my likes because
nothing brought me joy.
But I do think, like, I agree with you that the Constantine plot actually was really good with Astra in the underground and using like the soul thing. And the fact that Rey is such a ball of sunshine that even in hell he can make friends, especially like Vandal Savage and playing Jenga. I thought that was cute because it's just so Rey. I am interested to see how Astra moves forward into next season and her relationship with John and how that will change and how that will be affected or whatever. Oh, the other thing that I liked was Nora Dark Adam. I thought all of their scenes were great and how much she
blessings
really just like went did whatever she could to save him. And I'm struggling. Sarah was funny. That whole, yeah, that was probably the only part of that whole Hey World plot that I liked. Them, like, dressing up as superheroes. And, like, Ava being like, I don't think we should be deceiving people. And she's like, no, we have to, or else they won't come. So that was funny.
And they called the superheroes. Oh, yeah, they called the superheroes, and they didn't come because they were like,
maybe we should have done the crossover.
That was so funny.
So I basically repeated the things that May said, just in a different way, in a different order.
Copy your homework, but don't make it obvious.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, girl, I let you copy off my homework. And
hey, girl, I'm copying your homework.
Okay. Whew. Lord, give me strength. I'm glad the Hey World plan didn't work at first. Like, I'm glad that people were, like, not turned on by this idea and that they're, like, throwing tomatoes at them because it was a stupid plan. So I was happy with that at first. It worked in the end, unfortunately. But for a while there, I was like, yeah, you tell them this is stupid. I liked that Charlie was saved. Like, thank goodness, because they could have easily gotten rid of her here and they didn't. Also, I liked that she tried to use the disguise they had her in, basically, like the shape-shifting form, in order to stop the anti-magical creature bill or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So she did her best, and then they turned her into a squid or whatever, and that was, I guess, you know, for you Cthulhu fans out there, that was great. Yeah.
The Kaiju episode.
Yeah.
Callback!
So, Exactly. Callbacks. Continuity. Wow. Even though they weren't there for that. But whatever. Doesn't matter. That's just what came to mind, clearly. Anyway. Sarah, Nate, and Gary as the Arrowverse Trinity. That was quite funny, as you guys said. Loved the mention about how they should have participated in the crossover. And the fact that they know that no one would come to see their stupid circus if it wasn't for the franchise superhero endorsement. Although, to be fair, like, on the flip side, Sarah saying that no one would come for them was, like, sad, right? Like, oh, if we were actually our own heroes and no one would care. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of sad. Because on the one hand, you're like, no, we would care. But on the other hand, the people in the universe would not care because you're not there. You're off, you know, like no one knows who you are.
No one's supposed to know who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Commentary too about, I guess you can consider this commentary about how like the legends as of all the Arrowverse shows are also like the lowest rated on the network. So it's like they only come for the franchise heroes.
So sad. Anyway, so it works on many. There's many levels here. It's like an onion. But anyway, so.
And it also makes you cry.
It also makes you cry. I love the return of Vandal Savage. I love that he was moved by the living sunshine that is Rey. He was like, I see the error of my ways now. I
didn't know you get Jenga in hell.
Yeah, right. I was Jenga. I was like, what were they playing again? Yes, Jenga. They're playing a hellish game of Jenga. Beautiful. Okay. If Nate had stayed dead, I apologize to all you Nate fans out there, then his sacrifice and Constantine's help of that, you know, working towards that endeavor would have been, like, really morally complex, would have been interesting, like, how do we deal with this? It would have been a very meaningful storyline, but that didn't happen, so, oh well. But for a moment there, I was like, oh, I'm feeling, like, a mix of complicated emotions, and that moment with Hank was really great. Like, I really liked that moment, like you said, May, where they were just like, you know, dying early sucks, doesn't it? But you did good, son, or whatever. Like, I was like, oh, this is really, and I was going to tear up. I was just about to tear up. And then they kumbaya'd it all back. Yep. And took it back. And then I was just mad. Nora kissing Rey. Yes. Everything Nora and Rey was great. Give me life. I love y'all. And also the monitor, like, watching their circus from the sidelines and being like, nope, I don't need this. That was great. Munder was like, y'all can sit out another crossover because this is not happening. But I enjoyed that. Finally, even though I was mad about the Zari switch, Zari's brother does seem like a cool guy. He'll probably be enjoyable for the time that he sticks around. I'm glad that we'll finally get to meet, you know, him and learn what he was like. And I really loved his delivery of more pelvis in that hug than usual.
So if you didn't already know, that Legends title was Tati.
Yes, my one contribution to titles this entire time. All right. What did we not like aside from the rest of the episode?
Aside from Hey World.
The whole season has led to Hey World being an actual thing that happened, and people clapped for it and believed it to be a great idea. It even changed history. It helped to erase Zari because the future is all the better for its existence, and apparently magical creatures are okay with going from one prison to another and possibly losing their rights because Hey World is a prison. Let us be real.
Yes.
Like, what? I don't know what to say to that other than it's like the dumbest shit the show has probably ever done in a history of dumb shit that they've done. Like, yeah. The show is built on these things, and this doesn't work. It's like the one crazy thing that does not work. And then Legends has always been like the most fun Arrowverse show, and Jess will get more into this, and it definitely has like the highest level of escapism, but the lack of any actual logic lately and the contrived storylines that make no sense, even on a show that enjoys going with the flow whenever they want, has really dimmed my enjoyment of the show in the second half of the season. Like, everything has shifted so much, and I think the writers definitely forgot Desmond even existed at this point.
Yeah.
Constantine didn't really get any closure on that, and nor was he seen trying to reach out to him at any point after he walked away. So he just left, and then he was never mentioned, which I definitely did not like. And then they did to Zari what they essentially did to Nora, except Nora's, I can't believe I'm saying this, hers was actually earned. And Zari's sacrifice was primarily to service Nate's story. And, you know, so her sacrifice wasn't the same as Nora's. And it makes me mad because even though she and Nate are in a relationship now, he was still willing to sacrifice himself if it meant Ray would be free. Right. And that would have meant a lot in terms of their relationship, because that makes sense. It's been built up over, you know, several seasons and they have a bromance and all of that. So he wasn't really thinking about Zari, nor did they even have like a conversation about it. Like, oh, you know, this might happen. I might sacrifice myself. Here's like a really nice goodbye scene. I don't know. So Zari only left the ship because she thought he was dead and to sing him to life, which was really stupid and so cheesy. And I usually enjoy cheesy, but this was like really nonsensical. And I had made peace with Nate's death in the 2 minutes that it lasted. And I think it would have been a bit different for the Legends to have to deal with the real consequences of death the way that they never really have. Like, no one's died on this show except for Captain Cold. And I'm not saying that they have to kill people off, but they've
will
kind
next
of...
year.
Yeah, but in this season, they...
what if? Okay, I'll say that for predictions.
So okay, but in this case, like, they've kind of been building up to this moment for Nate, and then they went back on it in a horrible way by allowing him to get his life back, while Zari will now have a completely new one that she doesn't even remember from before. So she paid the ultimate price, and I hate it, and I hate that that's what they why they pushed this relationship so hard and so quickly. And it also did not bring me joy when realizing all of this was also an excuse to keep her on the ship, which kept her out of the action. And I didn't not like this, but I did find it strange that they'd have the monitor show up only for him to stand there and do nothing except, like, be entertained. He never engaged with the Legends, and he also never said a word. Whereas, like, in all the other shows, he was, you know, seen putting together all the puzzle pieces for the crossover. So... I just think that he was just there to remind us that the Legends will be in the crossover next year.
Right.
Which it was unnecessary.
Like, and thanks for that.
Hey, listen, yeah. The man got paid, okay?
I'm good
the man
for him.
Got his check.
I'm happy he got his check. But all in all, this episode like didn't provide much in the way of any emotional payoff to many of the storylines, and I was just really underwhelmed.
Unless you were really invested in that particular storyline.
Yeah.
Right.
To all the Zari and Nate shippers.
The disrespect.
So it took me 3 days to get through the Legends finale. Three. Like, it came out and I tried to watch it and then I had to stop. And then I watched the next day and then I had to stop. And then I finally had to finish it. Just because I had to, because I had to review it. And I remember in the beginning of the season being a little skeptical about the whole magical creatures things as big bads, because it sounded like a little too ridiculous, even for the Legends. And then we had like the first two episodes with like a nipple eating unicorn and someone who would later turn out to be Tabitha as the fairy godmother.
The good old days.
In like the second or third episode. I was like, okay, it's not as bad as I thought. And by now that we're at the end of the season and basically like the Oprah gift, like, see what I mean? It's gonna be as ridiculous as I said it was. And it's, like, Legends has just gotten super corny. Like, that's the only way that I can explain it. Like, they've just gotten, like, really, really corny. I blame Bebo, to be honest. You know, all hell Bebo, I blame Bebo. But this, you know, Hey World finale was even more corny than last year's finale with none of, like, the camp. And I feel like last year they tried to be, like, ironically corny with Bebo, and that worked. But this year they were, like, genuinely corny. And I wanted to die, just so I didn't have to hear them try to kumbaya, my lord, like, kumbaya, my lord, Nate's ass back to life. It was kind of like all of the, they probably called up all of the, like, the extras in Whoville to come and, like, stand around and, like, sing Nate back to life or whatever. And it's just like, why? Why are you doing this? Why is this, like, your finale of a superhero show? This is, like, Barney and Friends, you know, singing I Love You back to life. The whole, like, oh, love is also a powerful emotion. Yeah, they've done that somewhere on some show, and it's just like really, really corny. And yeah,
touched by an angel,
probably. Fear, but also the power of love, you know, whatever. Even
got to believe, yeah, in the power of love. English dub of Sailor Moon. Okay.
Okay.
I'll stop.
All right. Even worse than like the changes to the timeline, meaning Zari as we know her is getting erased and replaced with her brother, and now we see like that was what the manufactured romance is was leading to. Like we were, I was trying to figure out like why in the hell are we doing this whole Nate and Zari thing? In the finale, like, oh, that's why, because you're planning on erasing her, so that's why we had to do this. And I was, you know, we had I answered a question about, you know, Charlie and Zari and Nate and all that kind of stuff on Tumblr, and one was like, oh, you must be a bitter Xylee shipper. And like, it doesn't matter like who I ship, if I
Rebecca,
can
yes, but
like the objective like even if I did not ship them, I would still be like, objectively, this looks manufactured and put together. So I want to know like where those dismissive people are now calling me bitter, because I would like to see you explain how a whole storyline crafted specifically to lead to Zari's erasure is good and natural storytelling. Please, riddle me that, bitch. It's like
Gone.
in like I'm a little bit, you know, because I hate when people dismiss, especially like women. It's
Right.
like, oh, you must be just a bitter shipper. I'm like, no, like even if I like a different set of two people together, I can still have an objective point of view. And if that's all the only retort that you have, then, you know, it's just dumb. It's like, because you don't have anything else to say. Basically, you know I'm right, but you just don't have anything else to say, so you call me bitter, but whatever. going off. It's like they knew that this is where they wanted to go with her story in, from the beginning, but they were afraid that they didn't build up her relationships with all of the legends so that it would be devastating to the group when she was gone. So they had to make her important to one somebody. And seeing as how Charlie is like brand new herself and really much history with Zari or anyone else, can't be Charlie. Ray has Dark Adam now, so can't be Ray. Sarah has Avalanche, can't be her. And no one cares about Mick and his feelings, so it's like wouldn't be emotionally devastating if it was Mick. So the only person left is Nate. And because of all the legends, Nate was the one legend that up until this point Zari interacted with the least. The writers had to come up with some kind of story over the span of like 7 episodes to convince the audience that Nate losing Zari after just being brought back to life is it, like devastating, or at least on the same level of emotion as Amaya and Nate's goodbye being separated by time. And or like Nate losing his dad, and then he dies, and then he comes back, but then he loses Zari. They're trying to make it emotionally devastating to Nate, and for me, it just didn't do that. I just felt annoyed that Zari has now been sacrificed for Nate because she thought that he died and left the ship. And like Nate was saying, that's not even something that he didn't even discuss that plan with her. She's just like, I'm gonna die, but it's okay, or you know, whatever. He did it, didn't tell her, and then she's also lost now. But surprise, he survived. Okay.
Yes.
I agree with this. But if it had been Mick, he could have held Zari as she disappeared and been like, no, Zari, I'm sorry, I called you a bitch on Ramadan. And we could have been like, yes, a meaningful interaction. But
Why does no one think to kill Mick? Like, I don't
yeah. Mick died.
I don't know.
But also, it wouldn't be emotionally devastating to anybody if Mick died either, probably.
That's why.
That, I mean, that's sad, but
Yeah.
when you consider the audience, probably be like, okay.
Yeah. That's. I mean, I'm sure there are Mick fans out there, but I don't know them. Anyway, I, you know, maintain, as clearly you do, as clearly both of you do, that preventing the fear of magical creatures by forcing them all to perform in a circus is the dumbest plan I have ever heard of. I don't like, and they're the fact that they're playing it straight, like they're not even trying to make it like some kind of like meta commentary, like, oh, the legends are being just as bad as the thing they're trying to prevent, you know, which is how I feel, and I don't understand why they don't
Yeah.
feel that. Even when the magical creatures themselves were like, I don't want to perform for these people. They're like, well, do you want to die? No. So you better get out there and perform. We're like, wait a second.
Dance, monkey!
Exactly. I was like, this is not how it works. I'm so confused right now. What real world application does this have? A bad one. A bad one is what it has. But anyway, even I know that Legends is on like a different level than the other shows, but like even when Barry was rounding up the metas to like get rid of their powers, which was also very bad, like he wasn't like perform a musical number so Cicada will feel his or her humanity. Like, you know, like, oh, they're people too. I don't want to kill them. Or like, you know, the aliens. Supergirl will be like, all right, everyone, yeah. Aliens come to a zoo and put on a musical for Lockwood. So he can be like, I want y'all to perform musicals all the time. Does it make sense? It's just bad. It's just bad.
And it's also kind of like people telling, you know, the respectability politics for like minorities. Like, if you want the mainstream to like you, then you have to act a certain way, or you have to perform a certain way.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the, like, it's a bad real world application. Yeah. We don't want it. But I don't know that they're even thinking of it that way, which I don't know. I feel like in the past, Legends has been pretty clever about the way that they incorporate these kind of storylines. Like, obviously, they're not going political the way that Supergirl does. But I'm not like, wow, this is super problematic. But, like, all season with the magical creatures, from the moment that the Legends themselves were being assholes to them. I was like, why is this happening? Yeah, I don't know. And then Ava called them out on it, but then she was the one doing it later. And now even Mona is like, dance monkey. So, I don't know.
And Charlie, too. Charlie was, like, so against it. Now she's like, you know, let's dance for these people. You know?
Just whatever.
Is it really like, and I know they tried to make it feel like a support speech from her as far as like, this is for you, but like, is it really yeah. like, you know, performing a musical number? Is that really in my best interest? So that really helped me grow as a monster.
Help me grow as a monster. It's like, they should have performed Avenue Q specifically. That way they'd be like putting out a real message. But anyway, the fact that creating Hayworld actually works long run, and not just works, but like leads to an era of unprecedented peace, love, and understanding, erasing Zari's future and reuniting her family. Like, what? How? My brain actually exploded. My brain was melting while I was watching. I could not comprehend this information. I became Brainiac 5. I was like, oh my god, I have gone through the gamut of human emotions, and I came out the other side, an evil robot. Anyway, the fact that Zari couldn't stay in her place, right, just couldn't stay on the ship, like, can someone get Nate a doctor? Thanks. Oh, is Nate dead? Please bring his body to me. No, she was like, I gotta go, because the healing power of song was already shown.
You can't exist in the world without him.
I guess. She's like, I'd rather go to the other timeline then. And the power of song, which was introduced to her by Jane Austen, I guess, or the Jane Austen episode, by the random Bollywood element in the Jane Austen episode. And then clapping, she clapped if you believed Nate back to life, which suddenly made the audience like believe and care. And I don't know. It was very strange.
They literally had to join hands.
Yeah.
And sing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just, that's all of this how... was
okay.
It's not how magic works. It's not how the power of fear or love works. It's supposed to be your fucking tears. She's supposed to hold his body, and then her tears were to fall on his face, and that was gonna wake him up. That's how it works. We all know this. Anyway.
And here I was thinking Nora would sacrifice herself for Ray, but nope, that is nope. not what happened.
Thank God that didn't happen.
Well, thank God for Nate's sacrifice.
Well, yes. Yeah. Thank God it was Nate who sacrificed himself for Ray, but he didn't.
Seems like Nate loves Ray more than, I don't know, did Nate love Zari? Or does Nate love Ray more than Nora loves Ray? Because Nate died for Ray?
No. Nora didn't have that option. Like, there wasn't a way for Nora to die and bring Ray back, so it's fine. But Nate definitely loves Ray more than he loves Zari. And Zari, apparently, based on this information, loves Nate more than she loves herself. So, great. But, moving on. I'm sure, you know, we know Todd will be back next season. And I'm sure that Zari's new personality will still be fun and will still wind up on the ship, you know, somehow. They'll bring her back. But we've already seen how Amaya turning into Charlie wound up, like we talked about earlier on in this episode. Transplanting Rip's personality only led to getting rid of him. And transplanting Amaya into Charlie just made Charlie kind of irrelevant. You don't reboot characters that you actively care about and that you're invested in. Writers, like, write what they want to write, right? Like, it's the showrunner. They're not, like, hampered by something else. Like, I wish that I could write about Zari on the ship saving her family actively, but I can't. So instead, I will just make it happen by accident because of a theme park that Nate created and then bring a new Zari in. Like, this does not happen. He chose to do this because for whatever reason he didn't care about Zarly 1.0. Zari 1.0. I keep saying Zarly because Zarly is the true ship.
That's obviously what's happening. Because
I'm a bitter Zarly shipper. but, like, I just don't feel... I feel like they chose to vote Zari off the island. You know? Like, they were like, all right, you are the weakest link. Goodbye. Come back better. And I don't like that. So I'm very upset about this. Anyway, I co-signed everything that Jessica said about the Zari and Nate relationship and how it was written specifically to lead to her disappearance and to have that disappearance, like, quote-unquote, matter, because apparently it wouldn't matter if Nate didn't care about it, which right. is garbage. Which is kind of like the Amaya thing, too, right? Like, it's like, oh, Amaya leaving doesn't matter unless Nate cares about it. What is this? Whew. Anyway, I know you liked Astra unleashing hell on Earth with her coin currency, her soul currency, but it was kind of like random for me in the episode. I was like, oh, okay, this is happening now. And then it just ended. So I guess we'll just find out in 2020, after Crisis, what it means that these souls are on Earth now.
Oh, well, so, I guess that's, they have to, because they're done with magical creatures, and they're never going to do historical figures again, apparently, unless they bring back all these bad villains from different historical time periods. So that's going to be like the new thing next season, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm sure they won't be defeated with the power of love, so we'll see what happens.
They'll be defeated with the power of textbooks. Anyway, do we have predictions?
I do.
They
wrote Zari off and replaced her with her brother so that her brother can die in Crisis, and that's how she gets back on the ship.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my god.
That would be traumatizing for her all over again. Oh my god.
That's what's gonna happen. So enjoy him while you have him, because he's only gonna be here for the duration of the crossover and may not even be in all the episodes. But he is going to be in Crisis to die. And then the Legends are going to try and give his power wind thingy charm to his next of kin, which is Zari. And she'll take up the mantle in his name. And that's how she'll get back on the ship.
I hate it, but I like it. I still hate it. Because then he'll only really be around for one episode, like, because the crossover is...
Yes.
Yeah.
They're bringing him in to
die.
Oh,
my God. That's horrible. Tragic. Yeah.
That's so horrible.
My
oh my God.
Only prediction was going to be like, we won't really be that invested in the Zarya, or we won't have enough time to be invested in the Zarya reboot, because then the show will just end, so they don't have to write her off. They'll just write everybody off.
Oh my God. Y'all think that next season's the final season then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad times. All right. We shall Doom Patrol now. The episode was called Ezekiel Patrol. In the wake of the Chief's revelation, the Doom Patrol go their separate ways in the season finale. But when Mr. Nobody hatches a new plan, the team must reunite to help Chief with a new, unexpected, and weird threat to the world. Or at least to Danny the Street and the Niles' barely there daughter, Dorothy. Dermot Downs directed the episode, written by Tamara Betcher Wilkinson, Jeremy Carver, and Shoshana Sachi. What did we like about the episode?
Well, I mean, no one climaxed in this episode, so I was a little bit disappointed. But I did think it was I did think it was funny how quickly Mr. Nobody's, like, victory lap fizzled out and turned into him being, like, bored and depressed and, like, reading reviews of his performance as a narrator from, like reviews of the show, like, being evil and cliche and all this kind of stuff against, like, that fourth wall breaking part of, like, Mr. Nobody's character that I thought was really funny. Ezekiel the cockroach was never really, like, a character that made an impression on me. Like, it wasn't really my favorite, but I thought, like, at first, in the first episode, I thought it was someone's delusion, to be honest. Like, this is not a real thing. Is it nobody, like, speaking through a cockroach? Like, what is this? But it turns out that he actually added a lot of, personality in this episode, and I appreciated him telling Mr. Nobody to get his shit together, because he was promised a rapture, damn it, he wants it now. So that I thought was funny. It was even better when, like, Admiral Whiskers returned and they founded, like, the Brotherhood of Dangerous Animals. Like, all this time, like, the audience has been thinking that Mr. Nobody was such a formidable, scary villain, and here he is in the season finale, you know, blue lips and, like, his pants pulled down because he was on the toilet, teaming up with a cockroach and a rat to go bully Niles' daughter, because what? Like, Niles was mean to him? I don't know. So it's just kind of, like, funny in a, like, a ridiculous kind of way that this really scary villain is this in the finale. And even after, like, a brief rally, like, he's easily defeated again and has to, like, he continues, like, fails to meet the expectation that he himself gave the audience of what he was supposed to be like when he first arrived. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And, like, this time it's, like, Rita who has to pull him up by his bootstraps and all that kind of stuff. I do like how everybody in the show are losers, but Mr. Nobody can't even fit in with the losers in the Doom Patrol because they ultimately, like, forget him and leave him in the painting.
Poor Mr. Nobody,
man. He can't get a break. He got fired from the Brotherhood of Evil because he wasn't evil enough. He had a whole season to be evil and have, like, an evil plan, and that just kind of, like, fizzled out into something that wasn't even really evil, that all that evil to begin with. He was just kind of petty. And now he can't even fit in with actual losers. So, what does that say about him? I like the reveal of Niles' hand in each of the Doom Patrol members' fate, cut with them trying, in some cases more successfully than others, to move on without him. I thought Rita really rallied through her ordeal, even though high school theater is brutal, apparently. Those kids are mean, man.
that was wild.
I was like, damn. Jane continuing to, like, run away from her, having to deal with her trauma. I thought the visual of everyone kind of lying down, it was kind of sad, but the shot was pretty. And then it got really creepy when my sweet baby started playing. So, like, no, let's not do that. Wake up, Jane. Like, get up.
Take it back.
Niles is just, like, an awful person. And that, yeah, he willingly and deliberately destroyed these people's lives for his project. And especially Cliff, which... it's really bad when I feel sorry for Cliff. Because Niles had to go out of his way to cause an accident where Cliff kills his family, or at least his wife, and thought he killed his daughter. But all because Cliff survived the racetrack crash that was supposed to happen. Like, you think he would say, like, oh, we failed, guess that's that. But no, he had to do, like, another one and just killed somebody else in the process. And, like, to be honest, for once, I'm not mad at Cliff for going on, like, a fuck tirade and just being like, fuck you, and trying to, like, storm off. Because really,
right.
You know, he would have been justified in doing that. And by the time we get to Vic's story and Eleanor, I was so sure that Niles killed her and planted Vic's memories. And that was going to be, like, the real reason why. And then she was like, she said that she loved him. I was like, and I, oop. Like, what's going on here? But then after a pause, she was like, as a mentor and a friend, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because I was really, really confused for a minute. Like, did he have an affair with Vic's mom? Like, this is weird. I did like that Silas wasn't falling for Niles' bullshit, though. Like, when they finished the surgery on Vic and, you know, Niles was trying to push out a tear. Like, he was like James Charles trying to, like, push out a tear in an apology video. He's just, like, trying to feel sad about this. He's like, you know what? I can just take Vic off your hands for you, and, you know, through therapy and my version of empathy and meaning, we can give Vic some, you know, trying to make it seem like it was a good sale that Vic should stay with Niles. And Silas saw, like, right through that, and you could just see, like, the wheels turning in Niles' head, like, how could he turn this tragedy and loss of his friend to his advantage? And like, I probably him advocating to save Vic over Eleanor was part of that. And it's, like, his selfishness to just achieve his own goals brought him to the point of being, like, a vulture, like, picking on the scraps of the dead. And I'm glad that Silas picked up on it and called him out and just called him out on that. And then when the song playing, like, I get knocked down, but I get up again, that's, like, the theme song for the entire Doom Patrol. And I do like that Rita specifically was actually, she seemed excited to have a mystery to solve. Like, I feel like she's bored already being just, like, a regular person. So it feels like she's finally comfortable that being a superhero was something that she was good at. Not just being, like, an actress, but being a superhero, she's also good at that, and it's something that she could do. So I like that she kind of took charge of the Doom Patrol and getting everyone together. Well, she didn't really get everyone together, but like she had like the motivation or the gumption, if you will.
is that a sneaky nomination there?
Probably, because she's my forever Lady with Gumption nominee at this point. So
I do really like what you said about Rita finally believing that she's good at being a superhero. Because I do like that she kind of tried to live that normal life, but it wasn't for her. And in general, I loved how they all rallied together to ensure Danny Street's safety. But I think that what I appreciated most about this episode is how it showed the team trying to move past what Niles did to them and trying to do other things. Though Rita did seem like the only one who was really actively trying. And even though it was really brief, I like that we got the chance to see Jane at peace for a little bit and Kay getting like a break from her trauma, even though it was never going to last long because the cycles will always repeat so long as she's intent on not dealing with them. And then Cliff quietly being there for Jane was really moving because, like, for the first time, I feel he's doing it as genuine support without an expectation of gratitude because she didn't know it was him the entire time until she accidentally, like, walked out and saw him leaving the food. So that was really nice. And in general, I liked seeing the Doom Patrol doing things, like, outside of what we've seen them do all season and how they all kind of got out of their comfort zones in a small way to move on or attempt to move on. And Mr. Nobody continues like breaking the fourth wall, and the fact that he was reading reviews, like just said, of how not so great this episode is was really funny, but also sad because it did feel like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And
I also like that he got to narrate what the cockroach was doing, and the exchange from one large animal's mouth to another was like really like creative and fascinating, but like super
it was so
disgusting.
Gross, but yeah.
Creative and fascinating.
Yes. just because I want to, you know, see how much the show it gets creative when it comes to like weird and bizarre things, you know, they just go all out, you know, even more so than the donkey at the first episode. And then finally, I like knowing that Silas is not here for Niles's bullshit either. Like, he called him out about how they're not the same, and I honestly don't believe they are as similar as Niles thinks they are. Like, they've both done things in the name of protecting their kids, but at the same time, Niles ruined a lot of other people's lives because of his daughter, and he created problems spanning decades. So I enjoyed with
Silas only Niles ruined son's life.
Yes. He kept it contained.
Silas wins.
It's the little things.
Is that on that?
Yeah.
Okay. I very much enjoyed the meta of Mr. Nobody being like, you know, being like the absolute lamest villain. All season we've been waiting for him to make his like big move, right? He seems so intimidating and frustrating, and then instead he just ended up living down to the expectations of his ex who dumped him because he was not villain enough. And I also liked, even though this happened off screen, and so I didn't like that it happened off screen, I liked that his showdown with Dorothy, where a 13-year-old like girl kicked his ass, or a 10-year-old girl, however old she is, kicked his ass, was paralleled by Rita's attempt at teaching middle school theater. Like, a 13-year-old girl emotionally assassinated her, and then she was just done with teaching after that. She's like, all right, time to go back to being a superhero, as opposed to Mr. Nobody getting his ass kicked and his cockroach and his rat stolen by Dorothy. And he's like, okay, I guess I'm done being a villain. I guess there's something else I can do here.
I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it too. But yes, also I love that the team like came together and that Rita was the first one to be like, okay, you know, something's happening and we have to go do it. And she dragged Larry along, right? I love that for her because she was the one that was the most likely to want to back away at first. So we get to
and
see
And I also
arc.
Like that they live together. Like, yes! They made a choice to go buy a house together.
Yeah, they are. I love their friendship. And I love that it's always like characterized by Larry being dragged somewhere by Rita. What? He was like, do I even get a choice? No, Larry, you do not. So yeah, I like that. And also, like, in terms of like our character arcs and the growth that we're seeing for them, it was nice to see Larry, like, you know, letting the energy being out for exercise or whatever, you know, let's do a little more every day. That was really cute. So it's nice, like, that both he and Rita have come so far from where they started this season. And while this isn't, you know, not, she didn't come as far, but she has a much more complicated situation to be dealing with, would be Jane, because we see her, you know, going further than she ever has before to try to escape the pain, escape, you know, the busyness of the many personalities. But then once again, it was one of her personalities that, like, that smacked her out of it, right? I guess that was Helen, Doctor, whatever. That was, yeah. Like, no, we got to wake up. You have to face, you know, face the music. And the music is, of course, I get knocked down, but I get up again. Yes.
I get knocked down by an elephant.
But yeah, I really like that too, because, you know, we're finally getting to see Jane, like, kind of take ownership of her situation and sort of try to live her life despite it. Cliff didn't really, you know, he didn't really go anywhere, but it was nice to see him given, you know, leaving the food for Jane. And also maybe in a way, like, taking care of her without asking anything of her, right? Like, we're actually seeing him think about someone else and not make it about him, which I guess that is something. And then, I really loved, like, that scene, even though it was kind of like Nora talking to her mom. But Silas deserves it. So, like, the conversation between Vic and Silas, right, where, like, they're actually, like, on speaking terms again, and Vic has found something that he feels is useful that he's doing, right, kind of, like, stopping cyber crimes. And his dad is being supportive, but also, like, please love me. Please. So I like that. I was like, okay, this is nice. Again, like, I felt like everyone came, like, it felt like a full journey for all five characters.
Wasn't he always also trying to, like, gently push him into something beyond cybercrime? Because it felt like Vic is, like, a little bit stuck or, like, gun-shy about going out and actually, like, using his suit. Yeah.
And then his dad was like, don't you want to go back? He's like, why? Wasn't it cybercrime better than pickpockets or whatever? He's like, okay, I'll just leave it alone for now. Because he's like, I don't want you mad at me. I just want your love. But anyway. So I was like, it's definitely, like, better than they were doing at the
start. And it was kind of cute that he called immediately, like, Vic. He's like, I saw that your heart rate sped up. Are you okay?
Yeah.
He was right after he had, like, the nightmare.
Yeah, the nightmare, which was a creepy nightmare. Good job. At first I was like, what is happening? Oh, okay, it's a dream. Anyway, I love that the team came together, like, for Danny and Dorothy specifically. Like, they were like, not for you, Cliff. Not for you, Chief. You suck. We're not doing it for you. Anyway, I really love, like, you mentioned the scene where Jane kind of, like, gave up in the imaginary part of her mind, and apologized to Kay. Like, that was, like, a sad but beautiful scene. And I thought the visuals were really nice, and also, like, what it meant for her character. And then we got to see her get snapped out of it. I really liked that whole sequence. So it's, like, my favorite part of the episode, probably. I also loved when we got to the street. There was that newspaper pointing out that Fleck saved the Dannyzins. So it's like, oh, okay, that's because the first time, like, when I watched it, at first, like, I didn't catch that newspaper. So I was like, where the fuck is everyone? What happened? Did they get eaten? But this will, like, kind of lead into the dislikes. But for the most part, I was happy to see everyone safe. Yay. And Fleck saved them off screen, but he did it. Yay, Fleck. Okay. The Niles flashbacks. I really like them because they show how increasingly callous he became. And that even when he was haunted by something like, oh, you know, Cliff's wife died in the process of me orchestrating this, however I'm orchestrating it, he still doesn't care because he's still like, now let me use Eleanor's death to further what I need with Vic. So we see him sort of, like, becoming less and less human, and it's such a different version of what we've seen before. And yet he still feels like he's doing it all for a good sake, for the good thing. So I don't know. It's interesting. Interesting to see. Okay.
Interesting,
what do we not
that he's doing for a good thing?
Yeah.
Which leads into my dislikes.
Yay.
I feel like overall this was just like an interesting choice as a season finale. I felt whelmed in the most literal sense of a not real word. Like, it's just kind of there. Like, there's a lot of fun and interesting stuff that happened, and it still had all of the elements that have made Doom Patrol Doom Patrol. And it even makes fun of itself through Mr. Nobody, critiquing the season as, like, a convoluted and meaningless plot that ends in a whimper. And yet, even though they call it out, it still kind of turns out to be true. Like, May said, it was, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, huh. I would have expected, you know, the Brotherhood of Dangerous Animals to ramp back up the tension in the second half of the episode, but it really, they were kind of a mess, and the villain, quote unquote, turns out to be Niles' daughter, whose face we don't get to see because of what they're saving, I guess, for season two. And that felt a little bit cheap. Like, there's all this, like, dramatic pauses and Jane talking to something and you can't see it, or at the end you see the back of her head. And, you know, I don't know what it's supposed to be leading into for season two, for, you know, the villain or the obstacle to be, or the antagonist or whatever, to be Dorothy. I would have rather them brought back in the Brotherhood of Evil and introduce them and set them up as a big bad for season two, because nobody is a failure and he's always going to be a failure. So, like, here's the real Brotherhood of Evil, and they're going to come in and do whatever. Like, nobody's done, like, all this work. He did all, like, the grunt work to this season to groom the Doom Patrol into heroes while being the most evil TM, only be upstaged at the end of leading into season two by the Brotherhood of Evil. That would have been, like, that would have been probably, like, the traditional route, I guess, for a comic show going into, like, the second season and setting up the big bad. So, and Doom Patrol is nothing traditional, so I guess that's why it did not go that way. I feel like Niles' discretions just kind of got swept under the rug, too, because of the urgency of having to save Danny of the Street and Niles' daughter. Like, I don't understand, like, how is turning Cliff, Rita, Jane, and Larry into monsters and then experimenting on them so that they stayed monsters forever supposed to help Niles become immortal? Because, like, he was saying that this whole reason for doing it is because he wanted to be immortal and live one day longer than his daughter. And I feel like the fact that he's been alive since before World War One, like, isn't he already immortal? Like, didn't you already achieve that? So why do you need to continue, like, mess up other people's lives and then make them be messes forever? You know, like, make them immortal. Like, I'm gonna mess up your life and then you can't die. Congratulations. You're welcome. You know, it doesn't really make sense to me. And I feel like it would be more accurate truth to say that he created the Doom Patrol to be prepared to fight his daughter for him if it came to that, instead of, like, I needed you to experiment on you for me to become immortal. It's like, I needed you to be immortal so that in the event that my daughter gets released from wherever she is, that I have people around. That would have been the same kind of, like, callousness or uncaring as far as, like, he would still be a piece of shit, but it'd still be a piece of shit with purpose. Instead of just, like, me becoming immortality, because he already had that. And there was, like, a lot of other plot holes. Like, what happened to the Hangman daughter's painting of Vic killing everybody and, like, the nightmares he was having? Grid still being Grid and a threat to Vic. The conclusion of Animal Vegetable Mineral Man. What happened to him? What happened to his court case? I want to know.
Oh, no. Yes, that's true.
Like, there's not even a hint of Dorothy's powers that would really make me nervous that the Doom Patrol are in over their heads, other than the fact that her name is Dorothy Spinner. And if you look up Dorothy Spinner Doom Patrol in the comics, you also get an explanation why we don't see her face, because she's got, like, a, like, primate characteristics in her face, and her powers, she can create things out of nothing. So, like, if she has, like, imaginary friends, she can imagine them into life. And so you she's got all this power, and if you did not read the comics, so if you're a fresh fan to Doom Patrol, you wouldn't really know how powerful she is. And so it kind of makes the stakes going into season two a little bit low, because, like, okay, so they did it. They saved the daughter. You don't really see anything that would give you that uneasy feeling that she could be really destructive going into season two. So I feel like they could have set that up better.
I completely agree with that. I also agree with all the questions left unanswered in this finale that you brought up. And this episode also made me realize that they introduced Oyewa just to give Niles a daughter, because I assume that she's their child and that's why she's also immortal. And I don't know if I missed it, but is she still alive? Like, did they mention that she died? I was really confused. And also what I really didn't like about this episode in general, besides all of the dropped character threads and holes, is the lack of urgency. It just felt like another episode, but definitely not a finale. And the ending didn't leave me excited for what will come in season two for the reasons just said. And then finding out Niles did have a daughter just had me shrugging. And the first thing I wondered was if Oyewa, like I said earlier, had died. Because we don't know what really happened to her at all. She's never really mentioned. So that when we think Mr. Nobody's talking about, like, oh, yeah, I need to find her, it turns out that's not the her that he was talking about. So it's just a little confusing. And there just seems to be like a lot of missing pieces that didn't work to make the finale as great as it could have been, because they left all the mystery with Niles out until the last possible second to set up season two. And even like the random apocalypse episodes turned out to be generally more interesting than this one in hindsight. Like if they had tied the cockroach back into that, that would have been something. And then Niles did like a ton of awful shit, like Jess said, and they set it up to seem like they'd continue working with him to stop his daughter next season, and I don't like that. I'm not sure if Mr. Nobody being stuck in the painting after they all exploded out of it was meant to signify some of Vic's storyline about a painting, but there like has to be way more to it than that, because if that was it, then I'm really underwhelmed. And while I enjoyed Mr. Nobody all season, I do think the reveal of him being every bit of a loser that his ex said he was removed any hope of him ever being a formidable villain. Like after all his planning and he really spent the entire episode moping and panicking when he had plenty of time to figure out a plan B. Like he had all season to do that.
Right.
And then instead he had to get help from the people he spent all season trying to crush and thought himself better than them. So it was all a bit anticlimactic. And I agree with Jess that Dorothy didn't feel like much of a threat either, because we haven't seen how powerful she actually is. And then finally, I remain disappointed forever about Vic's subplot basically being dropped and ignored. And like he helped his friends and he's trying to move on, but he seems lost. And it's frustrating that he often suffers in silence with no one to talk to or vent to. So he kind of withdraws. And I want to see more of his story and him opening up about it in season two.
Yeah. I agree with all this. I mean, I think that, first off, I didn't realize her name was Oyewa, so that's why when you asked me if we knew if she was dead or not, I was like, huh? I thought her name was Slava. So,
yeah, I thought it was Slava, too.
But anyway, I don't know if she ever said her name. I just think, because in the credits, I see, like, it says Slava, and then it reports as Oyewa, so maybe they don't know her name either. But moving on. yes, I don't know what happened to Oyewa. I guess we have to assume she's dead, and I don't like that. Maybe she, like, gave her immortality to the daughter or something. I don't know, some weird River Song situation, because they brought that up, like Mr. Nobody says, like I was looking for your side piece or your whatever squeeze, your main squeeze, and I just found the daughter instead. So it does seem like she's gone somehow for some reason, which is weird. I don't understand. I mean, I guess it could explain the shift from the episode. This is kind of like a prediction, I guess. But, you know, like, when Hair Patrol happened, and at the end of that, yeah, he was like, my mission in life is to protect her and others like her from the Bureau of Normalcy. And then now, it turns out he's been using the Bureau of Normalcy to experiment on others like her.
Right.
Or actually to create others like her in order to make himself immortal for his daughter. So I'm like, maybe something happened to her, and that made him messed up again. You know? That's all I can imagine.
Or she did something that disappeared the mother, and so now he's like, well, now I have to love you from afar and also stop you.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that, you know, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. But either way, I don't like it that she's just gone without a trace and, you know, whatever. Anyway, this episode definitely made me feel like DC Universe was straining its budget. Like, this is like the first time where I was like, ah, ha, ha, I see. Like, you pointed out, Jessica, Jane's imaginary park scene was the same place that Larry had just been hanging out in. And at first we were like, why is she there also? But no, it's in her imagination. And they just used the same set because they were like, we don't have money for other sets. Which is probably also why we didn't even see a whiff of Dorothy's powers. We were just told, she definitely enlarged these guys. And it's crazy. We're like, oh, okay. And also, like, we didn't get to see what happened to the Dannyzens. Like, a scene of Flex saving the Dannyzens from whatever was happening would have been really interesting. Watching a giant roach and a giant rat, like, wander around an empty set and pretend like they're Godzilla but not actually see anything was anticlimactic, was not very exciting. So yeah, it felt like it was kind of like,
especially even from the point of them, like Ezekiel wanting like the end of the whole world, but no, it's just the end of the street.
Yes, Right. Like, they didn't even, I don't know, it felt like they could have played on that, right? Like, to begin with, that could have been the plot, like, to make Ezekiel think he's ending the world, but really he's just ending the street, you know? But yeah, but they didn't seem, like, self-aware about it. And for a show that is really self-aware, you'd think that's something they'd point out, which makes you feel like they didn't want us to notice it. Anyway. They, like Jess said, plenty of plot holes, plenty of unanswered questions. They're definitely leaving a lot of stuff for season two, which is unfortunate because we don't even know if there's going to be a season two. Like, Titans was renewed halfway through season one, and Doom Patrol is still nothing. So I'm like, excuse me, hello. Don't like that. But in general, it kind of felt like the writing for the final season of Game of Thrones. In that they cut out, like, important conversations because they didn't want to write them in. Like, at least that's how Game of Thrones was. But for Doom Patrol, it's like, we can't pay for them. So we're just not going to show that scene. I guess that's what it is.
He's like, someone is mad because we took all the money for the budget, so I guess he won't show anything else.
Exactly. And while I did like the flashbacks, I said I did, I hated that we didn't, like I said this already, we didn't get a clear explanation of what happened to Oyewa. Like, how did Dorothy become what she is? Like, and even, like, there's not really a comeuppance for Niles, right? Like, yes, they understand that he orchestrated stuff that happened to them, but I don't think they understand just how much, you know? Like, I feel like that should be, like, a whole new, like, wait a second, we don't want to work with you again. Like, the fact that he was manipulating things enough to know that Cliff should have had a car accident, you know? Like, how is he doing that? And I would like to know, I would have liked to at least for the flashbacks to explain how he was able to do that. But that does lead me into a prediction, which I thought was going to be revealed in this episode, and clearly it was not. And now I don't know if it's going to come true. But what I would assume is that the reason that Mr. Nobody was so mad at Niles is that Niles used Mr. Nobody's powers to make those things happen to those people. You know? Because I don't understand how else he's able to, like, be in charge of reality. You know? But now that they've made Mr. Nobody just kind of like a joke, it's just kind of like, I guess not. But that still leaves the question of how did Niles do that?
See, that would have explained a lot.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen. And that was not correct.
Did they even really explain why Mr. Nobody was mad at the chief, other than the fact that he was mean or something? I don't know.
Did they even really say what it was? Wasn't he the one that stormed in while he was getting his powers or something? I don't know.
Yeah, at the Von Fuchs place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But like, he still got his powers. Like, what's he mad about?
I think he got them, but didn't like it malfunction or something. So maybe it wasn't like he's not as powerful as he could be, I guess. I don't even know.
Okay.
Sure. It's like, we'll buy that until they give us another explanation. We'll go with that.
All right. Anyone else got predictions or questions?
It will be renewed eventually.
An excellent prediction. How about nominations for Lady with Gumption?
Let's see. Supergirl, Legends, and Doom Patrol.
I would say Charlie for Legends.
Okay.
You don't think that Zari had the gumption to erase herself from the timeline in order to stop Nate from sacrificing himself via the power of love?
No. Supergirl? I mean, Rita for Doom Patrol.
Yeah, Rita for Doom Patrol, for sure.
Supergirl, you've got a couple of different options, because you've got Mia, you've got Kara, and you've got Lena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was a lot of gumption in Supergirl. A lot of gumption to go around.
You
could throw Linda in there as well.
I think we should give it to Linda. You know what? That one, she went out there and she stopped Kara. She saved Supergirl.
Yeah,
just give it to her. And she could never do it again because now she's part of Supergirl.
That's true.
But doesn't that mean that she can do it again? Because she is first.
But it'll be Kara who gets. What I'm saying, she can never win again because like Kara who wins. Okay. Oh no! All future wins of Kara's will go to Linda. She like acts like that was a Linda part of her.
And then Lillian also poisoned the. No.
Yeah. Well, no.
No. Sorry.
We're giving us options, okay?
We have plenty of super options. I think that we can eliminate even though I do agree, like, of the Legends ladies, I would give it to Charlie, but I think that we can, you know, put that down, because she kind of, when she then gave the insight speech to the magical creatures, negative. So we've got the
cross
three.
Out Legends in general, so no one gets nominated no there.
One. So Rita, Kara,
and then all of the ladies of Supergirl.
Yeah.
Which one of those?
Anyone would you eliminate from Supergirl?
Man.
I guess I would eliminate Lena.
But she actually shot Lex.
She did shoot Lex.
I would eliminate Nia.
Okay, we can eliminate Nia. I just don't think it takes a lot of gumption to shoot Lex, but...
And I was going to eliminate Kara because she lacked the gumption to tell Lena the truth.
There you go. She didn't tell...
But then Lena lacked the gumption to tell them that...
She didn't tell her she knows! Yep! So really, it goes to Linda. Congratulations, Linda. Win by default. The sweetest victory of all.
So Linda over Rita? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's her last. Cause it's her last chance. That's why. Because it's her last chance.
Sacrifice her.
And she did. Yeah, she did make up for when she did find out that her whole lie. Then she did do the right thing and stop Lex from killing Kara. So.
Yep.
We'll go with Linda Lee.
Linda Lee, we'll miss you.
It was a pleasure knowing you.
All right. So remember that you can find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter, at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, or ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And please visit our Patreon page if you would like to hear our summer series, patreon.com/DCTVGumption. Thank you, and good night, or good morning.
Bye.
Bye.